Lecture 39, Ideology and Hitler's Foreign Policy.
Hello. Welcome to this 39th lecture in our series in modern European history. In our last lectures, we've examined the rise of the National Socialist Party in Germany before 1933. We've traced the establishment of the National Socialist dictatorship, the evolution of what came to be seen as a totalitarian regime. And we have also traced the evolution of Nazi domestic policy, particularly its emphasis on the Volksgemeinschaft and on the emerging racial policy of the regime, which by 1935 had crystallized in the so-called Nuremberg Laws of that year. Much of Nazi popularity in this period, a period domestically that would be characterized by a reviving economy, a return of stability, but also by this system of terror at home and an unsavory policy, racial policy, which many Germans found distasteful, weren't ready to oppose it, but found distasteful. Much of Hitler's popularity was the result of a series of dramatic foreign policy victories, foreign policy successes which between 1933 and 1938 did not simply revise the hated Treaty of Versailles, but utterly destroyed it. In this lecture, we're going to examine Nazi foreign policy, the step-by-step revision of the Treaty of Versailles, destruction of the Treaty of Versailles, and then also talk about Hitler's overall conception of foreign policy, the basis on which he operated in his approach to foreign policy. There is a temptation in dealing particularly with the National Socialist regime in Germany, dealing with the Third Reich, to think of Hitler as a kind of madman, a man driven by wild passions, driven by his hatreds, to pursue irrational, not to mention immoral, policies. The policies were certainly immoral, as we will see, but I think it would be a tremendous mistake to view Hitler as a madman bent on world domination, lurching from one extreme position to the next, or even following a step overall blueprint for action. Much of what the National Socialists would do domestically and in foreign policy, the specifics of it would be improvised. But Hitler did operate in foreign policy with a clear conception of his geopolitical and ideological objectives. He explained his views on foreign policy in numerous speeches during the Weimar years. He certainly took up his overall conception of world politics and international affairs in Mein Kampf, his political autobiography, published in 1925, and a second unpublished book on foreign policy, which he wrote in the late 1920s. Hitler operated with a set of geopolitical and ideological assumptions which guided his foreign policy from the beginning of his career to the last days in the bunker in the spring of 1945. Germany, he believed, should regain its position as the dominant power in Europe, the hegemonic power in Europe that he had seen in the age of Bismarck, and should reassume this position of leadership and of dominance in Europe. A greater German Reich, a Grossdeutsches Reich, as he referred to it, should be created, bringing together all German peoples in all German lands of Central Europe. And that new Grossdeutsches Reich should be purged of all non-German element, Slavs, Jews, and others who inhabited those territories. The German people, he believed, needed living space, Lebensraum, for its expanding population. And this territory, Hitler was quite clear about, was to be found in Eastern Europe. The Western frontier, the loss of the provinces of Alsace-Lorraine, were difficult to take for a great many people. But for Hitler, the loss of territory in the West, bad as it was at the end of the First World War, was secondary in his thinking about where this Lebensraum was to come.